Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This is a show about a dean that started to grow a community. Wiggler and Jess, here till it ends. Meet up to Pastor Phil Greendale with all of our friends. The brightest timeline's here to shine the way. Community building is here to stay.
Yeah, that's right, everybody. It's community building here on Post Show Recaps, talking Community Season 2, Episode 14, the OG Episode 14, Advanced Dungeons and Dragons. Coming off of a hiatus, I am Josh Wiggler. I am, of course, as always, joined by someone who always could speak gnomish should the need arise, Jess Sterling. Jess, how you doing?
Huzzah!
Yeah. We is that gnomish? It. Do I speak gnomish now?
You don't know. I mean, if you speak gnomish, you know exactly
maybe
what it means.
Maybe it's just that, like, the word Pegasus, huzzah, transcends every language.
Possible. Could be.
Jess, thank you and Melissa for holding it down last week while I was unable to be here. But there's no world in which I was missing Advanced Dungeons and Dragons. That was not an option.
Of course not.
Could not. I actually was here last week. You just didn't notice me. I rolled
just
a 20
really
on my stealth check, natural 20.
So, passed without a trace was up. Mm-hmm. You were good to go.
Yep. So that was what happened last time. I'm so excited about this because we needed somebody who could tell us where to get a Pegasus. And this is the person who's got the hookup. This is one of the incredible dungeon masters who runs the epic Dungeons and Dragons campaign in the Post Show Recaps patron Discord, someone who I will be spending a lot of time with this week. I'm so thrilled to welcome onto community building the great legendary Austin Smith.
As you walk into the room, you see
a man
with spectacles, blonde hair that probably should have been combed a bit better, a beard that should have been trimmed a couple days ago. He seems enthusiastic to be here, eager to talk to you. What would you like to do?
Oh my god, I would like to freak out. I feel like I've seen a celebrity. Like, that is like the reaction that I have. Mm-hmm. Austin, welcome to community building. It's so
Hello.
Great to have you here.
I'm so stoked to be here. I'm thrilled. This is legitimately like my favorite episode of community. I'm so excited to talk about it, and this is gonna be a blast.
I'm so excited. So when we did community season zero, just the patron only podcast back in the day, Jess, this was one that had to be included. You have to dig around. Obviously, the episode has been pulled from a lot of streaming sites. It is still up on Amazon Prime. I rediscovered. Because
yes.
I remembered that I discovered this for the last time as well. Was this the episode, Jess, that got you into Dungeons and Dragons? It certainly was the impetus for we did a Dungeons and Dragons session that we kind of build as a community building Dungeons and Dragons podcast.
I think that, like, it's hard to say like the number one thing. This certainly played into it, right? Like, if not for this episode and doing this podcast and then having the community D&D podcast that we did with Philly and Kevin and LaTanya, and Mike Bloom, like, it would have, I don't know that I would have played. So yeah. Like, I guess I would definitely say this contributes greatly to me playing Dungeons and Dragons now. And going back and watching this episode with a whole other lens is so fascinating.
Totally different.
I knew nothing about D&D besides you roll dice. Maybe there's a dungeon. Maybe there's a dragon. That's about it. And now I know so much more. So it's going to be so fascinating to go back in and talk through this episode with a whole fresh perspective. But I do recommend going back and listening to the Patron Only podcast if you're a patron with Kevin Mahadeo, because that was a really good podcast back in the day. So go check that out as well, because we do get into the whole drama of that being episode being removed. So yeah. I do recommend that podcast still.
Austin, I want to believe that we live in a world where you watched Advanced Dungeons and Dragons for Community Building Season 0, and then you got super into Dungeons and Dragons as a result of that. And then over the last year, just like very rapidly, hyper specifically, and incredibly developed a deep appreciation and mastery over Dungeons and Dragons. But I assume that that's not actually the world we live in.
Unfortunately, that's one of the other many multiverses out there.
There are other worlds than these.
Yeah, no, I've been a fan of Community for a long time, as well as playing D&D for a few years now, predating, unfortunately, the Season 0 yeah. Community building.
If only.
Yeah. But for me, like, Community was probably my introduction to D&D in any, like, material sense. But I didn't play it then for, like, several years, so I didn't get that, like, hands-on experience of what D&D can actually be like. And, of course, what we see in the show is very different than the way most people play D&D, or at least certainly most people play D&D now. So it's still, like, a very interesting perspective to go back to it. I'm pretty sure that Community Building Season 0 was the first time I'd rewatched the episode since I started playing D&D. So that was its own experience, as I'm sure you guys are, like, discovering now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, totally. I mean, so for people who were not a part of that, or people who are not part of the Potion Recaps patron experience, first of all, you can always change that.
Play lots of D&D.
If you wanted to change it, you could. You go to patreon.com/postshowrecaps, become a patron of Post Show Recaps, join the sprawling Dungeons & Dragons campaign, where so many incredible people are playing Dungeons & Dragons. Jess and I are both playing alongside so many of the other guests you've heard on Community Building in the past. Austin is running games, playing in games, so many other people involved as well. So consider it patreon.com/postshowrecaps. But yeah, for me, I had somehow had never played Dungeons and Dragons before in my life. At the point that I watched Community Season 2, Episode 14, Advanced Dungeons and Dragons the first time, I had done some Tales of the Loop RPGs with Philly and Mike Bloom over on our Stranger Things podcast, on our Lost podcast as well. Mm. But I had yet to do traditional D&D, which may come as a surprise considering I definitely have a lot of ways in which I identify with Neil in this episode, somebody who, having been bullied for my weight as a kid, things like that, being into a lot of nerdy stuff. Shout out to the incredible Brooklyn Zed, who I do the Final Fantasy podcast with on Post Show Recaps. I've been into, all sorts of stuff that is D&D adjacent for my whole life and have been ridiculed for it until I turned it into a job. Who's laughing now? But then I discovered D&D because of this community project. And I don't know how many sessions I've played in my life since then. In the last year, we're getting really, really close as this podcast is dropping.
Yep.
To the 1 year anniversary of the Dungeons and Dragons campaign launching in the Post Show Recaps patron Discord. And like so many others in the patron community have played so much D&D since then. And it has brought so much joy into my life. So going back and watching this episode was very nostalgic. There's definitely some stuff that's not great in here. And there's some moments that are obviously really, really hard to watch with Pierce. being a horrible, mean person. But the episode, and also there's some things where I'm kind of like Leonardo DiCaprio pointing at the screen being like, you can't do that. You know, why doesn't everyone else get to roll their dice? And yeah. Just like, and it, like, that's what's the skill check on that? You know, just lots of questions that I have. But I do think that the episode is so representative of the things that are great about D&D, and going back and watching it and knowing that this episode was responsible for a passion and a hobby that I got to develop over the last year. Makes this a pretty easy automatic 4 for me, Jess. I mean, I don't think that I can be biased about the Advanced Dungeons and Dragons of it all.
Yeah, I think that knowing that this episode is so responsible for a large portion of people getting into D&D and prompting us to do a lot of D&D stuff in PSR, I think, like, yeah, of course it's a 4, right? Like, even if they maybe fudge the rules a little bit, or we don't see them all rolling dice, or, you know, like you said, like, oh, you didn't roll for, like, to attack anything, and I didn't see you rolling, like, attack, you know, damage dice. It doesn't matter, because they still get the vibe of D&D. They get the experience of D&D.
Yeah.
Right in this episode. And it is only a 20-minute episode. You know, who cares if every single thing is accurate? They get the entire experience summed up very well in a 20-minute episode. So you can't be mad at that. There's too much right about this episode to not give it the perfect 4, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Austin, yeah. Could you, for people who don't know Dungeons and Dragons and only know it by reputation or by name, and turn their heads in the other direction when the words Dungeons and Dragons come up, how would you pitch this for somebody who has either been curious about it or would think that it was a completely not for them, and maybe even a shorthand into it is how you really got interested in the hobby, as I've heard it called?
Yeah, well, first of all, I'd say if you turn your head at the term Dungeons and Dragons, then I really think you should book in a physio appointment for your neck by the end of listening to this podcast, because we're going to say a lot. As for
anyone who would turn their head at Dungeons and Dragons anyways, someone who would turn their head at blueberry pancakes, like something that's just so delicious, why would you look the other way in the first place?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of blueberries. Blueberry bagel this morning, it's fresh, it's good. Mm. Anyway. Point being, D&D, that's what we're here to talk about. So D&D, or Dungeons & Dragons, is a role-playing game. It's a storytelling game that is predominantly in a very fantasy-heavy setting. You know, think your Lord of the Rings, your Game of Thrones, your The Witcher, your Wheel of Time. All of those kinds of stories can sort of fit in that D&D space. It is predominantly a game where you sit down and tell a story with your friends. You use dice to determine whether or not you succeed at something that you try to accomplish. And the game is overseen by someone called the Dungeon Master, which is the role that Abed takes on in the episode, who facilitates and guides the story. He kind of sets up the overarching scenario, and then everyone else at the table figures out how to respond to it. It's pretty much what we see in the community episode. To Jess's point, it does a really good job of capturing that vibe of what D&D is like, even though it completely obliterates a lot of the mechanical stuff that goes into the game mechanics for those that enjoy games. It's still a game. It's not just freewheeling, imaginative storytelling. There are lots of games out there that facilitate that. D&D is a little crunchier in terms of the rules and mechanics. But it's fundamentally about shared storytelling. That's what the point of D&D is, in large part.
Yep.
And No,
I want to know. I think you're getting into what I was going to ask. Like, can I find out how this happened for you? I would love to know. I would love to know what's the Austin Smith D&D origin story.
Yeah, so for me, that shared storytelling is my avenue into it. Like, I'd been around D&D, I'd sort of seen it. I'm very much like the stereotypical nerd, but I think D&D was something that just kind of slipped me by when I was younger. I'd seen the community episode, I'd kind of seen it referenced in a few places, but when I actually got into it proper and started playing it for myself, it was because I'd stumbled across another show called Critical Role, which is a live streamed tabletop role-playing game. They sit down, they play Dungeons and Dragons. It's a bunch of voice actors that you'll probably recognize if you play a lot of video games, and they just play D&D. And the storytelling in that show, as it was streamed live, and was sort of actual play, is sort of, I think, the term that's used generally for those in the current context. I'd come across it, and it really fascinated me. The storytelling, the engagement, the game itself seemed intriguing, and I wanted to give it a shot, and that got me in right from the get-go. I think I played one game before I started DMing, and then I DM'd until I got to play again, joining the PSR game here. So it was an instant infatuation for me of just falling for D&D and all of its possibilities, all of its all of the fun that you can have, all of the emotion you can pour into it, all of the creativity you can pour into it, telling the stories. That's pretty much my experience coming into D&D. Yeah.
One of my favorite things about this episode, Jess, is watching the experience of the study group kind of, if not outright fall in love with D&D, there are at least moments where they collectively do.
Oh, yeah.
100%.
And that's one of my favorite things about this is because I have seen people, you know, I've played obviously a lot in the PSR community, and I've played a little bit outside of it. And it was a really fun experience playing D&D with some of my outside the internet friends, because it did not seem like a thing that they would be interested in at all. Mm-hmm. And there'd be such sort of like Jeff Winger eye rolling type of behavior yeah. that I would anticipate. And there would be these similar moments as well of whether it was, you know, Annie seducing the gnome in the stable.
Yeah.
There was always something like that that would happen when I would play with my offline friends. And I love the way that occurs in this episode. I do think, I mean, I don't know what the future holds. Is there another Dungeons & Dragons
yes.
episode? There is, right? Yeah.
Yep. There's a sequel to it. Yep.
So I can imagine the universe where at least a few of these people, a few of the characters on the show walk away
Britta,
from the table very changed.
I yeah. think Britta is the main one that sticks out to me because I am the Britta, I feel like, some of the time where it's like, we need to do something about these people. Like, as if you check out DM Philly's drunk Dragonfly stream, as they would say, these people are being oppressed.
Yes.
Like, we need to do something about this.
Change your name. Yeah.
Yes. And so, like, having those moments where all you need to know is, like, a name and, like, a little bit of a description of a character and maybe a voice, and you fall in love with that non-player character mm-hmm. and NPC for short. Like, that's all you need to fall in love with a character. And Britta, to me, exemplifies that very much. So I agree. I think it's, like, a really fun way to show D&D being played, if not mechanically correct, at least getting the heart of the game correct.
100%. All right. There's so much episode to discuss. We will, as best as we can, resist the urge to just talk about our D&D campaign. And instead, we will talk about the D&D campaign that is happening in Advanced Dungeons & Dragons, the community episode that we are here to talk about. First, we will throw it to our sponsors for a quick commercial break. When we come back, we will recap the rest of the episode. Stay tuned.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And we're back. Okay, that's great. Jess, it's Advanced Dungeons & Dragons. It's directed by Joe Russo.
Yep, got a Russo brother.
Got a Russo brother, so that epic storytelling is very much intact here in this episode. Written by Dan Harmon and Andrew Guest. Originally airs February 3rd, 2011. Oh, so close to a full, I was going to say full 10 years ago, but I forgot that we're out of the hell year of 2021. And into the presumably new hell year of 2020.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's too early to be that cynical. Oh, God.
Is it?
Is it? Oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
So we start off in the best way. A lot of ways that D&D campaigns and or, you know, adventures start off.
I do want to drill down into this a little bit. So the narrator is going to talk us through, gather close, you might hawk in the story of Fat Neil. And it has
yes.
this big Galadriel energy, the big Cate Blanchett stuff. We're really going for Lord of the Rings.
Yep.
Austin, one of the things that you are so great at, as evidenced by your arrival onto the podcast, is, you know, this sort of embellishment and the telling of a story and the unfolding and unspooling of a yarn. I was playing a session with your friend and mine, DJ LaBelle Klein, a few days ago, and he did this big sprawling prologue, and it was so much fun. And this piece of it, how much of the Dungeon Master experience is writing, and how much of it is writing in advance versus kind of writing as you see it? I'd love to hear a little bit about that process from your perspective, because this is a very funny opening, but it also feels very true to D&D.
Oh, 100%. And I think it varies, like, Dungeon Master to Dungeon Master. Some really enjoy the spontaneity of just kind of creating it on the spot. Some will, you know, write out paragraph upon paragraph of kind of setting up the scene so that they know exactly what to say. And I do something somewhere in the middle. Like, sometimes I'll wing it. Sometimes I'll have very specifically written introductions for a specific scene or a specific setting. You know, when you come into the room, this is what you see because the specifics are important, or for either creating the atmosphere or establishing clues about what might happen. So there is definitely a lot of writing that comes into it. And even if you are a more improvisational DM, I think there's still like a lot of that you draw out of the various stories that you've heard told. You draw out of the Galadriel prologue. You draw out of the other sorts of stories you've heard regaled to help you come up with those terms and create that atmosphere in the moment. And that's what I love about this opening, is it instantly puts you in that space. It's such a perfectly hilarious way to both establish that idea of what D&D is, as well as riffing on something that everyone recognizes from pop culture.
I mean, I think that the thing that's great about it, Jess, is that the episode itself is a session, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, this does open up the session. You know, it's not the actual opening of the mission that they're going to go on. But it is, for us, it's the start of our adventure through this adventure with study group.
And everybody has these like formal names too, which Jeff, I just find the liar, so funny. Yeah, son of William, the barely known. Yeah. And then Annie, the day planner, herself a recovering head case.
Yeah.
Troy, the obtuse. Shirley, the cloying.
Oh, that's so sad.
Abed, the undiagnosable, which is even more sad.
Yeah.
Britta, my favorite is the Britta, the needlessly defiant.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's so apt. It's just, I mean, it's spot on.
I'm very here for the way they describe Pierce the insensitive, also known as Pierce the dickish, and Grandpa the flatulent.
That, he's not, you know, invited.
some villains require multiple names and titles.
Looking
at Game of Thrones.
And then so we hear the story of Fat Neil and what happened and why they recruit him to play this game of D&D. They're going to invite him to a Saturday game of D&D to help him reclaim his confidence.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the meeting, they realized that Chang had been there too and felt too awkward to mention.
Yeah. Well, he's wormed his way in. He's like sleeping on or hanging out on bookshelves. So
And then it's a game which not only might save a life, but which will forever change the balance between good and Pierce.
Yes.
So we know outright what is going on, right? Like, they tell us what's going to happen. It's bad things with Pierce. Mm-hmm. So we start at the study room table and everyone is like smiling very awkwardly at Neil. Chang is dressed as a drow elf, and this is the reason the episode gets cut from like a lot of streaming services, because it is said that it is, you know, him doing blackface.
Right.
We talk all through this in the Patreon podcast, so I definitely recommend going back and listening to it. But Shirley points it out. She's like, this is a hate crime.
Yeah.
Not great.
Does anyone wonder, are we just going to ignore the hate crime?
Yeah.
And I will say, I am going to give Chang a bagel this week. And I feel like I've got my reasons why pretty firmly held. And you know that I tend to give Chang a lot of leniency here.
Yeah.
But I have now, Austin, seen enough of Chang to feel like I think he knows what he's doing here. I don't think that this is good. And I think that he knows that he's being an agitator and that this is not great.
Yeah.
At the time that I watched this episode, I think I had seen like 4 Chang sightings and did not know enough. I know enough now to call it. And on top of that, Chang's actions make this episode of Community very difficult to access.
It's very true. We can blame him for everything that has befallen this episode.
And he didn't have his character sheet. He didn't know what he was going to be playing. So this is actually very uncalled for,
I think. He specifically just dresses up as a drow elf just to be controversial.
Knowing more
about
D&D now and knowing more about Chang, I feel like a flat zero for this guy. I feel pretty confident in giving it to him.
We find out Abed is the DM, and he says, we're going to be playing the Cavern of Draconis.
Is this a real thing, the Cavern of Draconis? They have the book that makes it look like an actual set. Oh, gosh, Austin is digging around for something. Please tell me
I don't have it. I haven't been playing D&D that long.
I was going to say, oh, my God.
I wish I could be like,
how prepared are you?
The only one I'm finding online is, like, made-up ones that were made in honor of community. Because the thing is, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Austin, like, is there a difference between Dungeons and Dragons and advanced Dungeons and Dragons?
Yes, there is. There is. I believe, I'm probably going to get crucified if I get this wrong, but I believe second edition D&D was released in these two, like levels. You had D&D and then you had AD&D or advanced D&D. And the idea was Dungeons and Dragons, like second edition, was the like introductory like one that you would pick up to sort of learn it. And then Advanced Dungeons and Dragons was a lot more complicated and had a lot more going on.
See, this tracks with the joke later where Pierce is like, I know Dungeons. I won Dungeons and Dragons and it was advanced. Yeah, I was like, what is he talking about? Okay, so this makes sense. So Abed has made character sheets for everyone. I would get... If I was Abed here and I specifically made people character sheets with their personalities, them in mind, and they all just randomly grabbed one, I'd be so mad.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, he put them on the table like openly rather than like, here is your character, here is your character. He
said, choose your character carefully.
He clearly didn't run a session zero. He didn't set the parameters of what to expect.
What
from
an
this
amateur.
Game.
Well, also, but I think that it's another big whiff on Abed's part because it's not like he doesn't know where the seating assignments are. Yeah. You know, everyone sits in the same chair. You could just put the sheet out in everybody's spot and not get mixed up.
Yeah. So everyone, he just grabs one.
Yeah.
Troy says, shouldn't there be something to Jenga?
Yes.
Talbot says, it takes place in our minds.
The Jenga tower is in the theater of the mind.
Love Troy. I don't know why it cracks me up so much when Troy just goes, oh, Neil. Instead of using the word cool, he says, Neil.
It's perfect. It's such a perfect line delivery, as Donald Glover always is with things.
Yes. So he says, working as a team, your goal is to track down the dragon, kill him, and then claim the treasure as your own. Now, knowing that we've played D&D now, a dragon is a BFD. It's a big effing deal. Like, you have to be a high-level character to kill a dragon.
Do we know what level these characters are? No?
Can't be very high. Yeah. I mean, it would be tough to give them character sheets for like a 10th level player if they've never played before. You'd have way too, it'd be like analysis paralysis or whatever, like too many options, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know, but they're going up against a dragon. Maybe they nerfed the dragon. I don't know.
Let's be fair. Abed's playing pretty loosey-goosey with the rules. I think he's fudging some stuff for narrative license to cultivate, you know, a good experience at the table, you know.
Yes.
Maybe it's like the coffee dragon that I used in one of my sessions where it's like, it's a dragon.
It was a coffee dragon?
Yeah, I had a coffee dragon that like did like fire damage because it was hot.
But it was Stalling it made hot. Of coffee?
Yes.
It was a dragon made of coffee?
Yes. Was All it... the food came alive. That was the session.
Was it liquid?
Yeah.
Whoa.
It was in a coffee cup, like, you know, like a little mug.
That's cool. Yeah, I know
it
mugs.
It was very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, Max. So we find out some of the character names. Shirley is a dwarf named Zippity-Doo.
The names are amazing. Jeff is Mar.
I love that Abed didn't even choose, like, you know, Jeff, you know, Dan. Like, nothing normal. Troy is Bing Bong the Archer.
Bing Bong the Archer.
Danny is Hector the Well Endowed.
Hector is going to be MVP of the session.
He made that one with Troy in mind.
Yeah. They did a handshake. Did.
Yeah. Britta's Lavernica.
Lavernica.
And Chang is Brutalitops, the magician.
Yeah. Yeah.
I will say, like, as much as I hate the stuff that they do with him being in blackface, every one of, like, Chang's line deliveries this episode cracks me up. And that's why, like, for me, he can't get a bagel because, like, he still, like, makes me laugh a lot. And the way he then, like, leans in, like, magic user, baby! Like,
magic
always,
user, baby! Yeah.
Always gets me. And it's one of those things where I keep instinctively going to quote it in situations where no one will have any context of what's going on.
That's great.
Yeah, Chang would actually really love D&D, right? Like, you get the vibe that, like, he's
clearly
very into it.
Yeah, I mean, he seems to know what a drow elf is, unless he just researched it to be horrible. Ooh. Which is not impossible, but
that's,
I guess,
possibly, yeah.
I do get the sense that he knows what it is.
Yeah, so an arrow flies through the air. Goblins are running towards them. And Troy wants to attack them using his additional notes, which isn't going to work.
Perfect.
Britta says, I want to know why these goblins are attacking us. Maybe these woods are their rightful land. Everyone just groans. Britta is correct.
She is. That might be the setup.
It's,
you know,
true.
So often, like, you know, you set up the, you know, the turnabout, you know, you go in to help the village and you turn out the village are actually the bad guys, or you go to, like, fight off the goblins. And there's a reason the goblins are invading the village, because they've been pushed out of their actual caves by some greater evil. Like, it's hilarious. Britta is on point in this episode.
Yes. 100%. Yeah, she knows exactly what's going on. And then, of course, Troy with the line that it's like one of the funniest lines he says in this episode. You're the AT&T of people.
What does that mean? You're the AT&T of,
like,
people.
Like, AT&T sucks, I guess. I don't know. AT&T isn't around anymore, so I'm allowed to say that. They're gone.
Oh, man. Who's the Verizon of community is my question.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't know.
Jeff.
I throw my throwing knife.
Yes. The goblins surround them, but Neil attacks them using the sword of Duquesne, which is a +3 sword. I have a +1 weapon.
Maybe this is why they felt comfortable sending them all after a dragon, because they had Duquesne of the clan Duquesne on their side.
This is wild. A +3 item. Austin, have you heard of such a thing? Does this exist?
Yeah.
Oh,
it exists. It
is
sitting,
like,
there
top
waiting
level stuff,
for higher,
right?
levels. So yeah, like, this is
such a high,
like,
level.
I don't think
thing.
It's a legendary item. It's not an artifact, but it's up there. It's, you know, very rare. Gosh. It's special. They're out there.
So with one swipe of the sword, he kills all the goblins. Which, again, ridiculous that this could happen. But again, it's a show.
So Neil, who again, just to kind of tip the rest of the podcast, is going to obviously be the consensus Dean's List candidate.
Obviously,
played by Charlie Kuntz, who I think is honestly a very gifted actor. You know, we had seen Neil at other points throughout the show up to this moment, but it's usually just in the background or just as an aside. And he comes in here and sells a lot of gravitas and emotion. You know, this is not an easy job to come in and kind of be the heart of the episode as a total, you know, background player who is not, you know, a famous person like Jack Black coming in, you know, or anything like that. It's just, he's just amazing. I'm really, really impressed by Neil in this episode, by Charlie Kuhn specifically. I think that he does such a great job with this character. So just want to get the praise in early, because there's a few moments that happen throughout this, you know, that moment where he's, I pity Pierce, you know, it's just so good.
Yeah.
Really, really great eye acting from Charlie Kuhn.
And as you praise Charlie Kuhn's, Britta praises Neil, and Pierce is spying on them, and he is so angry. He was not invited. He calls the game gay. He calls it stupid.
Yeah.
And then he asks, why was this a secret? Are you cutting me out of the group? Troy's like, oh, we just forgot. And of course he knows that's not true. And then he's so mean to Neil, who's sitting in the spot Pierce normally sits in. He calls him fat. He's like, you're stretching my chair. He makes him get up. And Britta and Jeff try to pull Pierce outside, but he demands to be put into the game. And immediately we know, okay, Pierce is the enemy, right? Like, Pierce is the guy we're going to hate all episode long.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Pierce has been a consensus antagonist for a very long time, but I know that this has been observed before by many people. This is a real heel turn of an episode, yeah. Although Jason Reed on the Cobra Kai podcast this week and I talked about, can you really do a heel turn if you're already the heel? You know, he is kind of already there. But Austin, is this the worst Pierce that we've seen so far in your mind?
I think so far, like chronologically, like coming through, you know, I was about to say campaign one, season one into season two.
Campaign one of Community.
Like, I think
Greendale
this is, like,
role.
The worst we've seen appear so far, because he's just so consistently like horrendous. Like, we've seen like shades of Pierce being really awful before, but it's usually been peppered in. But he just goes all the way to the extreme. Like, he is at like a 10, like a, you know, in terms of his degree of just being awful. So it's tough. It's really, really tough. It's, even though this is one of, if not my favorite Community episodes, like, it's so hard to watch all the Pierce stuff because it's just so brutal.
I think the great part when you're watching back and you're kind of watching everything in order, I think the show sets it up so well, mm-hmm, that like it's mainly happening over season two that we've been building to this point where Pierce feels left out. Pierce feels like he's not appreciated as a member of the group. He's never told things. Mm-hmm. And the more they leave him out, the more he wants attention. And he's like a child. He'll get attention whether it's bad or good. Like, he, as long as someone's paying attention to him, he's pleased. And so I think like the show does a really great job of getting us to this point, even though it's tough to watch. And even though, you know, I despise Pierce, he's a great villain in this episode, because great villains, you see the pattern of how they arrived at their villainy. And we could see how Pierce got here. So even though it's tough to watch, like, it's a great realized villain, I think.
100%. Yeah. I think that escalation of Pierce, you know, even like into last episode, like, you know, it was sort of very similar things that were sort of bothering him about, like, not being a part of the group, not getting the laughs, not getting to be the center of attention. And now he's like actively left out of something for good reason. But from Pierce's perspective, someone who just wants to be amongst it, and for good or bad, like, it's escalating. And I think this is such a pivotal episode for really defining Pierce as being more than just a thorn in the side, more than just you know, the awful member of the group who kind of gets turned to for like the really off-color jokes or the kind of uncomfortable moments in the show, but as someone who is like actively problematic. And it really escalates that forward, you know, to where where we're going ultimately. Like, I love this episode for its position in the season two Pierce story, which is really like the overarching story of season two in a lot of ways, is this problem, you know, when a friend or part of the friend group becomes the problem child and becomes a really divisive factor of like, what do you do with that when they are actively working to tear the group apart?
Yeah, so he demands to be let into the game, and so Ahmed allows him into the game. You notice a 67-year-old naked man, no weapons, lying in the wet grass, shivering.
He will die of exposure in 13 turns. Jeff, what do you want to do? I will wait 14 turns.
Such Amazing. A great moment. So perfect. But Neil,
so
being
Neil
the
is so good.
That
I give
is,
the man my cloak to keep
and
him
knowing
warm.
That this is a magical cloak and a magical item is like, to me, I was like, oh! Like, that is such a big deal to give somebody else your magic item. Like, oh my, that's a big, especially to someone as undeserving as Pierce.
But then Pierce takes the Sword of Duquesne, and thanks to Abed rolling, he gets it.
And he decapitates Chang.
Yeah.
In one hit.
Well,
like,
it's a plus three sword.
I know, but he probably needs to attune to it, right? I can't.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter. It's fine.
It's maybe the ones in Grace Bubba just being like, no, we don't need this at the table.
right.
Well, if he's fudging the rules so that Chang has to leave the room, please pack your knives and go. You know, I think that's fine, and I do love sort of the. You know, it's like the first member of the fellowship going down, yeah. and like the Howard Shore score in the background, amazing. Basically as he leaves. Not to insult Boromir or anything, but
It's definitely like Chang up here. Chang down here, and Boromir way up here.
I
love the music and the sound cues in this episode. It's all so fantastic.
Yes.
Like the when it does pick up with like that very Howard Shore Lord of the Rings feel on all these moments, it's beautiful. But I love even like the little like touches of the sound effects and the way that the actors like actually like respond to the sound effects. Like when Pierce comes into the room, there's like that chill wind sound effect, and they all shiver as they then like as we pan across to see Pierce like leering through the doorway. And it's just it's one of those little things that I think helps create for us like watching the show. What it's like to play D&D, like how those sorts of things kind of create an atmosphere of what you're playing, and you do feel the chill wind, you do feel hear the somber music in the background. It's so wonderfully done for both being evocative and also really freaking funny.
It accomplishes two things at once. It's an impressive feat for sure.
Yeah, so Pierce's character runs, they try to catch him, but the cloak has wind walking, which doubles his speed. So he's almost like he's hasted, I guess.
Yeah.
And apparently it took Neil 10 years and 50 campaigns to get this sword. Now, I assume, Austin, he means like 50 sessions, not campaigns.
Unless he plays
a lot of D&D.
Maybe he just plays a lot of D&D with carryover characters. I don't know. Again, things get very loosey-goosey in a lot of the terminology and ideas here. I'm assuming it's sessions here.
Yeah.
But even so, like 10 years and 50 sessions, like that's 5 sessions a year. That's not that many.
That's not a lot. That's what I was wondering. I'm like, what?
Got to be short campaigns. And it might be one of those things where the way we would maybe consider like an arc of an adventure that might last over like 3 sessions or something. So, okay, that's a campaign. And then the next campaign is bigger than the next village. Maybe that's sort of what he means. Regardless, he's played a lot. He earned it. And
Pierce took it.
And Pierce is doing unspeakable things with the sword of Duquesne.
Duquesne
is going to places that should not be traversed.
Also, ouch if he does something wrong with it, like yikers.
Yeah.
Roll a dexterity check, Pierce.
Yeah.
And
now that was an out for Abed.
He could have done a dexterity check.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to come in here because this is one of those things that rewatching the episode after I've played D&D and played D&D a bunch that like bothers me a little bit about the episode, but I can kind of let it go because, you know, we're watching a comedy. We need things to be light, to be funny. We need characters to do things that maybe are not great along the way. But Abed is a really bad DM in a lot of ways.
He's not great.
He does so much stuff that really does not do what a DM should. Like, a DM is there to facilitate the story. It's to facilitate not just the story, but the experience for the players. And Abed does so many things in this episode that actively work against that. Like, Abed knows what the point of this game is. It's to build up Neil and give him a moment to, you know, feel like a winner, to help rebuild his confidence. But Abed then enables Pierce to come in and pull it apart. Pierce asks, I want to take his sword. Can I take his sword? All Abed has to say, no, you can't.
Yeah, no.
But he doesn't. And he continues to do all these little things that, you know, like rolling to see whether or not Pierce successfully humps the sword. Like, it's just that there are things about that. And it comes up in other places, too, where Abed is just not very good about, you know, respecting the boundaries of his players and respecting the boundaries of the table. And while it, you know, helps make for some of like the funny moments or some of the drama in the story, I really hope no one looks to Abed and says like, this is how I'm going to DM.
Oh, God, no.
Because God, that's a...
Not the way.
That's really bad.
That's
an RPG horror story ready for Reddit
This is not the way.
Like, it's not good.
Yeah. Yeah, so Jeff finally pulls Pierce and Abed aside and he says that Neil is severely depressed and that Pierce is being awful to him. And Pierce says he doesn't like being excluded. Jeff threatens to kick him out of the group if he doesn't stop. And one of my favorite lines is, I'm sick of you threatening me and talking to me like a kid and giving me that look you give me like I can't get erections.
Oh,
like,
no.
It's just, I can't help but feel that like Dan Harmon was getting all of his frustrations with Chevy Chase out in this episode by giving him lines like that. So Abed finally says, okay, Pierce, we're separating you from the group now that you're not on the same side anymore. And Jeff says that their new goal is to kill Pierce.
Yeah,
find Neil him. Just wants to go home.
Get him.
Yeah, yeah. But Neil says they could move faster if they had a Pegasus. And we get the Troy, huzzah!
Yeah.
Which is fun.
Beautiful. Beautiful gift.
Pegasi are cool. In the community RPG that we've played, Jess, don't our characters who have been left in great peril, don't we currently have Pegasus?
We have two. We have two, and we were fighting over both what to name them and who actually owned them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which sounds like very much like...
If I'm not mistaken, I believe that my character, Wanda the Bard, fell off of a Pegasus?
Yes.
When last we left her to a great height, and we don't know if or how she survived.
Because there's a lot going on there.
I'll just tell you, I'll definitely in advance roll a new character. I don't think I'm gonna make it.
And then we get the really funny like montage of and so it was the group began to describe themselves walking. And as they described themselves walking, so did Abed confirm they walked.
Yeah, it's great.
So great. Yes.
So this is when we meet the gnome. Yes. And only Britta can speak to the gnome.
Because the gnome only knows gnomish, as if gnomes don't usually also know common. Like, all right, fine. Fine, community. Fine.
Yeah.
Not upset about it.
Slightly defensive, perhaps. A little bit. As it comes to gnomish relations. But I really love, because this is where we really start getting into role play the first time in mm-hmm. the episode. And we get into the whole, please don't report me for execution. No. And just, oh, we got to do something about the gnomes. So it's just such a great character moment, as in like the character of Britta, but also mm-hmm. the character of Lavernica. Everything that happens in this town is so, this feels so true to a D&D mm-hmm. session is, okay, we're going through town. We're meeting a bunch of fun people. It's great. It's really, really great. D&D hangout vibes.
Yeah. Even down to like then Abed being like, ah, Pegasus, a word I understand in every language.
Yeah.
Like, you know, DMs, like sometimes you need to like move things along when things are getting sidetracked.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
Let me get people back on the rails. Yep.
Yeah. Exactly. I'm the Britta. Anytime there's an NPC, like a non-player character, I want to interact with them. I want to know their life story and like I'm going to fall in love with them. It's just what's going to happen. So then we see Garrett deliver a bunch of D&D books to Pierce in a closet. Pierce throws a candy bar for him to chase like a dog, and he finds the copy of The Caverns of Draconia, which isn't great for everybody else.
Yes. Is this real stuff? The Caverns of Draconia, or is all of this made up for the show?
I think all of it's made up for the show.
Okay.
I'm sure some of the books in there would be, but like, I think Caverns of Draconis is one made for the show. But I don't know. I feel like I'm going to get... Again,
I Googled it, and I could find was that like ones that fans had made up. So they've arrived at the Field of Pegasi, but a beautiful elf maiden has them. And of course, she's attracted to Jeff's character, who's extremely uncomfortable flirting with Abed. And he goes, I don't normally do this, but you're the most beautiful creature I've ever seen, and I would really love a Pegasus. Yeah. And all the girls are just like, ugh, except Shirley, who loves it.
Yeah, it's working.
It works for me.
It's working for me.
Shirley is one of those characters in this episode that I always forget just how funny she is. Like, every line she has cracks me up. But she doesn't have, like, the big moments that other people do, but Yvette Nicole Brown always just killing it with whatever she's given.
Yeah, so so Abed tries to invite Mar inside, but to the bed.
Mar,
But he doesn't want to do it. And then Abed's like, now the elf maiden is offended and she doesn't want to do business with you. And of course, in steps Annie, Hector the well endowed. So
I take her by the hand and lead her to the stable. just the way that Alison Brie describes this whole thing when she's allowed to use her voice, but then when you get to watch the full montage of what my favorite moment is when she's counting fingers and then decides on the fourth finger, and she's just gesturing. It's like, oh my god, this is so
you know exactly what they're saying.
Yes.
And it's so funny. It's my favorite moment of the entire episode. And I just love, okay, great. I stroke her hair lovingly and spoon her for the appropriate amount of time before
leaving. And how long should they be cuddling for?
And he just does such a great job that she secures the Pegasus.
This is one of those moments, Jess, where if I could, I would give Annie a 6 out of 5 Meow Meow Beans. You know, this is an exceptional moment on the show.
This is hilarious. This is absolutely one of the highlight moment of the episodes. Again, Abed not paying attention to his player's boundaries, not respecting the X card. Hilarious nonetheless. I can give it a pass.
It's so great. So like these are the moments that I point to of like, I know season one wasn't like the Annie season, but season two, it's just like everything Allison Brie is doing as Annie works for me. And this is just like a key moment of that. So then Abed goes to check on Pierce. He now has a throne. So he's a throne of boxes and cones.
He's terrifying.
Yeah.
He looks and he has horrifying. Wine. Yeah, the goblet. Yeah.
Yes. So now Pierce is brought back into the room and everyone's like, ha, we found you. You're gonna die. You spot a body in an elven cloak in a clearing below. He's caked in blood. And surely, I love this. I've been waiting for this moment in the game.
In the game.
So they find the Sword of Duquesne, which is interesting that Pierce left the sword there. But the bodies isn't Pierce's. It's the gnome waiter. I do have one nit to pick here. A gnome is not anywhere near the size of the 6 foot whatever Chevy Chase.
Yeah, but maybe with
to be fair. Yeah. And yeah, it could just be, yeah. A gnome is that. Or, I mean, to be fair, we don't know that Pierce Hawthorne in the game is not a tiny little naked gnome. No, he is human. I forget. He's a naked human.
Yeah, they do say they do mention he's human.
Yeah.
Then we get it's the gnome waiter from the tavern, and Britta is devastated. He goes, "Just so you know, my name was Kyle.
Eagle sound makes it.
Oh my god. R.I.P. Yeah. Kyle.
Yeah. And Pierce says, "Now." And so then we find out that Pierce has found the amulet that allows him full control over Draconis, the red dragon. And Pierce is naked.
It's so evocative. It is too evocative. It is, you can see it
too
and
much.
It's horrible. Dial it back, Dan Harmon. No, this is perfect. This is exactly how it should be. It's just horrible, evil, old, fat Pierce riding the dragon with his magic amulet doing all of these horrible, horrible things.
Yeah, so Pierce casts Time Stop, which I don't know if that's an actual spell. I imagine there's something out there like it.
Yep, it's a little thing. Yeah.
So then Pierce casts Shape Change on Duquesne and is so awful. He's like, how fat do you want to make him? As fat as Fat Neil. And it is so hard to watch this part. It breaks my heart every time, because you would just see Neil like, he just wants to play D&D. Like, that's all he came here to do, and just to be ridiculed endlessly. And I can only imagine the amount of bullying he's had in his entire life, and then to have it here when he's supposed to be at a safe space like D&D is. Really awful to watch. It makes me hate Pierce to the limit does not exist.
It's bad. I mean, this is also where Pierce, kind of unveils why this is all happening in the first place. It's because Jeff feels bad because he came up with the term Fat Neil, because there was another Neil nearby and it was just easier for him to call him Fat Neil to differentiate the Neils. And it's just, the whole thing is emotionally savage. And again, I just want to give so much props to Charlie Coons, who I think sells it so hard. I felt very seen by a moment like this. Like, I've been in versions of this before. It's a horrible, horrible thing. And I think that the way that he exudes so much emotion. It's really the eyes. There's just something about his, there's something about his face that expresses, there's strength in it too. In this next moment where he says, "I pity you," it's just, it's really, 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 really well done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Everybody kind of takes their turn pitying Pierce, because it's obvious that he's just so insecure that this is what he does. He feels bullied and then he turns it around on Neil and he bullies Neil. And so Pierce unfreezes time and he's going to try to blow fire on them, but that used up his turn.
Yes. Big mistake.
Yeah.
Although I don't know that we're properly tracking the turns. Also, when did we roll initiative?
Never. It's one of my favorite lines. So it's like, roll initiative. It's like, you know, your heart starts like pounding. It's great. So Neil throws his Sword of Duquesne at the amulet, which also, like, is it a ranged weapon? Who knows? And he needs...
It's a difficult shot. That's why he needs an 18 or higher.
Yeah, DC 18.
And he rolls a 19. Everybody celebrates. The red dragon is no longer under Pierce's control. It grabs him and swallows him alive. Everybody gets the treasure. Neil says this was the best game he's ever played in his life. And he even asks Pierce if he wants to play again next week.
Oh, maybe. Maybe.
Yeah.
He says. I guess all's well that ends well. I mean, Pierce is defeated. The Sword of Duquesne is retrieved. I mean, poor Kyle the gnome. That wasn't great. We did lose Kyle. But other than that, no. We did lose Chang. Yeah.
Yeah, how quickly we forget.
What are we gonna do? We have to go on a Brutalitops resurrection quest.
No,
I think
Austin, are you prepared to preside over that ritual? Or
no. Well, let's say no on that one. A hard pass.
Let sleeping drow elves lie. Yeah,
yeah.
I think Brutalitops' soul is not willing to return. DM fiat on that.
So then we get to the end scene. Troy and Abed are having an argument about having a tail versus giant ears. Troy says tail, Abed says giant ears. They walk in and there's a different study group in there of all like older Asian women.
Yeah.
And then they get them to vote and they vote giant ears.
Giant ears. Streets extraordinarily ahead. This scene is like, it's definitely not the best post-credit scene, but I love it so much because it's completely away from everything else that happened in the episode. It's localized on Troy and Abed, which I think these things ought to be more often than not. And it's so goofy and weird and random and very, very, very fun. This is sort of the platonic ideal of a community post-credit scene for me, for my taste. So big thumbs up on this.
I also have it streets ahead because it's so funny. It's so great.
Yeah, easy streets ahead. Like for me, like it's a little more towards like the median strip between streets ahead and streets behind, but it still cracks me up every time. But again, Abed just really off base. Like, why would you want giant ears?
Yeah, no. It frees up your hands. A backpack already frees up your hands.
Yeah, but a tail, you'd need to have all new pants made.
You just cut holes.
Cut a hole.
Okay. Sure.
I think that's right. let's get into some F community feedback here. This came our way from Dan Sinensky. The great Dan Sinensky writes in and says, Pierce's actions in this episode are reprehensible and arguably the worst he's ever been shown. Still, I think if a Pierceless study group ran a paint-by-numbers campaign to get Neil's confidence back up, he still would have been severely depressed and might have gone through with his plan to end his life. The fact that Neil actually had to struggle to complete the quest and also his choice to show compassion towards Pierce seems powerful. I don't want to give Pierce an out for his behavior as his intent is unquestionably in the wrong place, but the episode is trying to show that Pierce's intrusion saves Neil's life. What lessons are we supposed to take from this, if any? It's a good question. I mean, I think I still would love to not have Neil's life be saved by Pierce being horrible. Mm-hmm. But I mean, what is it? What is it that Coach always says? Iron sharpens iron, right? You know, it's the fight that makes you stronger. I guess there's a bit of that in here in this episode, but I don't know. I think like a really good non-personally damaging campaign could have done a lot of good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, I think I agree. Like it's one of those things where obviously the show is trying to sort of pivot Pierce's contribution as being critical. But it's part of the reason why that last scene of Neil, you know, thanking Pierce for basically abusing him for a day, and like saying, come play with me again next week, doesn't sit well with me. Like, I know it's there for to sort of show Neil's compassion and Neil's growth, but it doesn't, it's like, D&D can legitimately be therapeutic. A lot of people find a lot of relief in exploring, you know, aspects of their own experience, their own personality through role-playing games like D&D. And I think there could be a really powerful story for Neil in finding people that want to play with him and engage them. And we see how quickly as well the study group kind of falls in love with the game and kind of connects with it and engages with it and has a lot of fun with it. You know, Neil walks with them as we go along. Like, there's totally a world in which Neil's sort of journey through this can be accomplished without a few more sessions to kind of get to that point. But like, it doesn't need to be through a crucible, I think. And I don't love that aspect of sort of the moral of the story, so to speak.
From Riley writes in, Pierce's full heel turn here is excellently done. I can't explain how much I hated Pierce in this episode the first time I watched it and how the character could never come back from this. I identified a lot with Neil, and seeing what Pierce did to him genuinely hits me hard emotionally every single time. I love that now, having watched it all in sequence, you could really see how Pierce got here in an excellently told story. You see how much he's struggling this season with jealousy, with feeling like he's left out, with not getting all the attention that he wants. Pierce finally lets his inner self out, and it is ugly. This arc is a wonderfully told story, brilliantly written and acted, but dear God, it can hurt to watch. And F you, Pierce. That all feels right on to me based on my experience with him so far. Mm-hmm. I will definitely say that this episode lands more emotionally for me this time around, not just because of the increased connection to Dungeons and Dragons for myself, but also because I have now seen, you know, 2.5 seasons of Community. I have seen how Pierce has gotten here to this point. You know, he has definitely, you know, had a few episodes this season where he has just been completely sidelined, whether by his own actions or he's just, you know, sort of like in the bar and he can't even get in his chair, Jess. So I think that Pierce feeling the way that he feels in this episode to me feels more earned than just him being just a total turd. And that's the thing.
Yeah.
You know, like, now I feel like I've got some context for it.
Yeah, for sure. Eric Divestine writes in and asks, why do you think they chose to have a 19 rolled in the climactic moment instead of a nat 20, natural 20? I agree with Eric here. It would have been so much better. Imagine the moment he rolls the 20 and then somebody does the DM Philly 20.
It'd be good.
It would be so great. And they missed that moment and I'll never forgive them.
It bothers me every time, sir.
Well, also, I think for me, because it's a DC 18, you need an 18 or higher.
Yeah.
So either go 20 or go 18. Just hit the DC, you know?
Yeah. Why a 19? Why?
Yeah. The 19 is a strange choice. Was he a fighter? Plus one? Something like that? I don't know. So maybe it was a 20.
I think that Duquesne would be a paladin.
Yeah,
I guess it feels paladin-y.
I think that sounds right.
Yeah.
One last one from Jank. Jank says, this episode captures the theater of the mind setting of D&D in a fantastic way, both through the character slowly becoming immersed and also by the episode featuring mostly just the study room. The only added things are the music, sound effects, and voiceover with stylish but still realistic interludes. So there's still a bit of production element to bring the game to life, but it really does rely on the viewers imagining the story with the characters. I think that that's an excellent point from Jank, that I think that this episode makes the audience, Austin, play Dungeons and Dragons, kind of.
Yeah, 100%. Like, I think again, like, I love the simplicity of it. You know, D&D, when you play it, you're sitting around a table or you're sitting around a virtual table staring into your screens. Like, but that's all it is. Like, you might have some ancillary aids, like you might have some maps or some, you know, additional, like, paraphernalia, but by and large it's all imagination. And it's really cool that they chose to go that route rather than going like a claymation style route and making it like I could see a world in which they told this story in like a you know, Rankin and Bass style, like Lord of the Rings animated, like sort of style, and kind of gone that route. And I'm really glad that they just let it be the people sitting at a table. Yeah, basically another little bottle episode, almost. Like, it has that sort of feel and vibe, which is perfect.
All right, it is time for the Meow Meow Beans to rate each character in this episode. Already gave Chang a bagel for taking this episode off of Netflix.
With an exclamation point, I might add.
I did exclaim this. I am going to give Pierce a score, actually. I'm going to give him a 3 is where I will land Pierce. He's horrible in this episode. Zero doubt about that. But I think he is a very effective villain in the episode. So kind of in the spirit of when I give someone on Down the Hatch an MVP point for being a very effective villain, I will at least chart Pierce for being a really effective unifying force of evil in this episode. I think they do a really good job with his character. It's just horrible to watch. I gave Shirley and Troy both a 4. They're very funny, but I think that they don't rise to some of the highs that I get from Annie, Abed, Britta, and Jeff in this episode, who I will give a full 5 to all 4 of them. You know, Britta, when she encounters a gnome for the first time, or how she wants to save the goblins. Even Jeff, I think Jeff just being the person who brought all these people together and rallied these people together for this cause is a great sort of sign of Jeff's growth. And of course, it all happens because Jeff was a terrible person in the first place, but he wants to make it right. And then Abed and Annie would all they needed was the scene in the bedding of Heather in the stable in order to get the 5 from me. So that's where I land with my meow meows.
Amazing. Go ahead, Austin.
So yeah, it's just beans everywhere for me. Like this is one of my favorite episodes. And pretty much everyone's getting really high scores. Jeff absolutely gets a 5. What I think I really love about Jeff's role in this story is it feels like it's really the first time that he is going out of his way to do something good for someone else, and very specifically that it's not someone in the study group, which I think is a really interesting and important note, because so far it feels like every time we've seen him do something that kind of verges on a bit of selflessness, it's still for the people that he's closest to, whereas this is someone like it's spurned by guilt, it's spurned by feeling like he did a bad thing. But he's ultimately still going really out of his way to engage with something that Jeff never engaged with. Jeff's not a D&D guy by basically what we've seen of him. So he's you know, pretending to be interested, but he'll go through with playing. He'll go through with engaging. He'll gather his party to help this other guy. And so I think he absolutely needs a 5. And I also really love a lot of his lines, even though they're kind of played for laughs. Of course, Britta, perfect 5. The line she has with Kyle's death about how you wouldn't understand the emotions. Like, that's exactly it. That's D&D. perfect 5. Same. Annie gets the 5 for the scene at the bed of Heather. I'm going to give Troy and Shirley 5s as well. Like, they don't have as many like major notes, but pretty much everything they say cracks me up. The huzzah, the Jenga, the additional notes, all of Shirley's reactions to pretty much everything throughout the episode elevate her. And she has a few like sly little lines in there that crack me up every time. Abed gets a 5, of course. He's hilarious in what he does. So much fun. His characterization of his NPCs is hilarious. And ultimately, even though I kind of gave him crap for being, you know, pretty rough with some of his DM style, you know, it's tough dealing with Pierce. So I can give him a little bit of slack there that he's doing his best to try to keep things on the rails.
He is a rough and tumble player at the table for sure.
Yeah,
it's true.
He did not sign the social contract.
Yeah. No, did not sign the social contract. Also on it, didn't set his boundaries, didn't respect them very well, was going to punish his players for, you know, outright stating they do not want to engage with flirting at the table. Anyway, so if I was rating Abed for like how he is as a person, he can't be a 5, which is also partly why I'm giving Pierce really high score. I'm giving him a 4.5, even though he is an abjectly awful human being. He is the dickest of dickishness. because he's awful, but he plays such a pivotal role in the story as a really a perfect villain. And for me, when I think of Pierce, I think of this episode, for better or worse, because I think this is such a perfect distillation of Pierce as an awful individual. And if I'm not docking Abed for being an awful, awful DM in looking out for his players, I'm going to give Pierce a higher score for his role in the story.
I'm also going to give Chang a 4.5. I hate,
you love
I hate
that line.
I hate the blackface stuff, but like a lot of
between his introduction to Brutalitops and the death scene, it cracks me up just enough that like I'm really low on Chang generally. So when he manages to make me laugh, it's going to boost me quite stratospheric, even though I can't give him a full five because he's dressed as a drow in full black paint. But that's me. Very, very high. Very, very high.
Yeah, I would say I am like, I have the highs and the lows, right? I gave Pierce a bagel. He's a great villain, but the stuff he says to Neil, it's so triggering. It's so awful. It's not anything I want any character to ever have to hear somebody say to them. So he gets a 0. Chang gets a 1 from me simply for the intro he does for his character, right? He'd get a 0 if not for the, the intro, because he's so into it. And Brutalitops, the magician, he gets one point, one single meow meow bean from me. Everybody else I'm fairly high on. Shirley gets a 4. I think she has, like, I love her, like, it works on me. Like, that's very funny, but beyond that, she doesn't have a ton to do. But she's still funny enough that she gets the 4. Jeff gets a 4.5. I give him credit for bringing the group together. I wish he would have like engaged in it like a little bit more. Like he's kind of trying. He's not like fully trying. So he got a 4.5. Everybody else gets 5s. Britta, Abed, Troy, and Annie. If I could give Annie a million, I would. Like yep. I think she's fantastic. I think they all are. Yeah. Yep. They all are so funny. Britta, I felt what Britta feels.
Britta like, was so good.
Britta with the gnome is
we
like...
We gotta do something.
Yeah, we have to do something about these gnomes. Like, that is her getting into the character. And I loved it so much. I love her being like, I have a belt. I have a jacket. I have boots. Like, I love her going through everything her character has. Like, it's... Even if she's not doing it in any type of detail, I just think she's so funny. She deserves a full 5 as well. So we haven't had actually any movement in our character rankings. We still have the same order. Abed and Annie are only 1 point apart, which is like too close for my personal liking. But we still have the rest of the season to get through. Chang's hanging out of the bottom with 114.5, which is a full like nearly 70 points below Troy at the top. So that's where we are on our character rankings right now.
Yeah. For the Dean's list, it is a clean sweep for Neil.
Woo!
Austin provides an asterisk.
Yeah, well, I figured I couldn't go this far, but we do have to respect the non-playable character of Kyle the waiter here. I was very close
Kyle
to
Kyle the waiter. We love Kyle the waiter.
Yeah, I was very close to aggravating Jess by giving.
I would accept it because he's a gnome.
Yeah,
because he's a gnome.
And yeah, I'd be here because of the precedent of the baseball bat and the yog. Austin, there's the joy of creating an NPC. If you could speak to that, I would love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, landing an NPC that like you come up with it in your head, and then it actually comes out the way you intend at the table, and the players like enjoy them, the characters interact the way you expect them to or want them to. Or they take a life of their own beyond what you imagine. It's thrilling. Like, I'm certainly not the best when it comes to NPCs. They're one of the things I struggle with most as a DM. But the DMs that can just pull NPCs out of their hat and make you fall in love with them are phenomenal.
Yeah.
So big ups to Kyle the Gnome.
R.I.P. Kyle the Gnome. Kyle Resurrection Quest coming to the post show recap.
Yeah, that is a res quest I would run.
I'm here for it. I'm here. If anyone wants to run the Kyle Resurrection Quest, I'd love to be a part of it.
Love it.
All right. Let's do the episode rating. I mean, we're all a four, right? I think.
Yeah, natural fours all around. You know,
I think that there are definitely marks that I would certainly explore against the episode, if not for, you know, sentimentality for me specifically. That I think that this episode of Community had beyond the. So contemporary American poultry had the huge seismic impact of being the one where then I went to you, Jess, and said, okay, so we'll just do the full Community rewatch at this point. We will figure out a way to do this. So that is one way in which an episode of Community had a huge, meaningful impact on my life. This is the other one. It introduced me to a whole new world that I had never explored before. Don't you dare close your eyes. So I have to give it the full four. I'm so... You know, it helped me tap into a really important creative vein that I had neglected for a long time. And brought me closer to a lot of different people. Yeah, it's an emotional score for me. Can't not give it a four, ultimately. Austin, you're a four as well for this one, as you mentioned.
Yeah, clean four.
Perfect episode. Yeah.
Yeah. For me, I feel very similarly as you do, Josh. Like, D&D has meant so much to me over this past year. It has been like my number one hobby, if you want to call it that. I just feel like that is like putting it lightly. Like, I dove head first into D&D. It is a creative outlet. It has kept me sane in times where you're stuck in your house all year. Like, it is something that I care so deeply for. And this episode of Community had like a very decent chunk of the reason of why I originally got into it. That first session, Josh, where you and I had never played before.
Ever.
And we were like, what do they call them? Murder hobos or whatever? Like, I certainly was. I'm like, oh, this guy, let's kill him. He seems bad. Why not?
Yeah,
just so much like of my love of the past year, like living in the past year. A lot of it was D&D. And so, like, yeah, of course this is getting a fork. I could easily poke holes in some of the mechanics. Why would I? It's fun. This is fun stuff. So four from me. The audience had a 3.79. This is the number one episode so far. By not much, actually, though. Like, 3.95 is the current average. In second place is the conspiracy theories and interior design episode with a 3.94. So just 0.01. makes the difference between first and second place. Again, send your scores in. It matters. The less data I have, the more each individual piece of data means. So community at postshowrecaps.com if you want to send in your scores. Send in all of them for season two if you want. I'll still take them.
Yeah, we're still taking them. But I mean, just looking at the top five of season two, it's all a 3.9 or higher. I mean,
it's a great season.
It is. Dynamite season.
Yeah. It really is. It really is. All right. Well, so that's Advanced Dungeons and Dragons. Austin, this is so amazing having you here. I'm so excited. I get to spend a lot of time with Austin this week. We're going to be playing D&D on your birthday. Yeah.
So exciting.
Birthday. Happy.
I can't do the whole thing. We would need the full gang anyway.
Yeah, we gotta bring in the entire
Everybody sing happy birthday into your phones right now.
Everybody do it.
To Austin. So listeners out there, please make sure to wish Austin a happy birthday. Austin, where can people find you on the internet? What do you got going on?
Yes, so you can find me on Twitter at AustinFSmith8, which is a terrible handle, but that's the one I've got.
I've heard of worse.
Yeah, if you want to see me play some D&D, you can find me over at twitch.tv/DMPhilly every few weeks. I play a D&D game called Humble Ewer, where we are a bunch of woodland critters having big Red Wool style adventures out searching the woods for lost magical artifacts. It's delightful and very, very fun. So come check me out there. If you're into the Survivor sphere, new Survivor is coming up in the new year. I write for Inside Survivor, kind of recapping episodes. I'll post links to my Twitter when that comes around. Otherwise, come play D&D with me and Josh and Jess at the Potion Recaps Discord. I DM there. It's wonderful. It's a delight. So if you wanted to try D&D after watching Community's episode, we got you covered. And that's me.
You can come in and you can play at, if you've never played before, you've got plenty of people who will show you the way and have a great time doing it. So really, really fun. Patreon.com/postshowrecaps. experience the joy of having Austin run a session for you.
It's so much fun.
It's a really good time. A very, very, very good time. Mm-hmm. Jess is on the Twitter bots at the Jess Sterling. Jess and I are currently alongside Grace Leader, who is also a dungeon master in the Potion Recaps Dungeons and Dragons campaign. We're covering Yellow Jackets on the daily, on the week daily, Jess, at the moment.
I'm loving Yellow Jackets. Check out that show if you like Lost, if you watched the show The Wilds, if you like anything like that, check the show out. It's really, really fun. So that's been a lot of fun to do recently.
Doing one podcast recap a day every week for 2 weeks.
It's a lot, but you know what the great part? You know what the great part is? There's recurring bits that, because we've just podcasted with each other like the day before, keep coming up. So go check. I laughed so hard I cried the other day. Like, go check out that podcast. And then, of course, you can always find me on Shit 90 Shows Taught Me. We are just starting season 5 of Boy Meets World, and we are in season 3 of Dawson's Creek. Of course, we do loads of bonus content as well. You could check us out at Shit 90s Pod on Twitter and Instagram, and, of course, shit90spod.com.
Yes. Just what's happening on community building next week?
So we are getting into season 2, episode 15, early 21st century romanticism with the one, the only Phil Thompson. He's coming back. He was on the patron only podcast Once Upon a Time.
Incredible. Very excited to get Phil back in the mix here for next week's episode. Early 21st century romanticism. I have no idea what that's going to be about. I assume Thanksgiving as a throwback.
Always.
Great stuff. I'm on Twitter at Round Howard. So many things happening on post-show recaps. As this is coming into the main feed, we are in the home stretch of the Cobra Kai daily podcast there. So you can check that out, of course. And so, so, so much more. Book of Boba Fett, just an incredible amount of content happening on post-show recaps. If you cannot join the Patreon for whatever reason, that's totally fine. What you can do is you could subscribe to the podcasts. You could rate the podcast. You could write reviews. All of that is supremely helpful for us as we continue to grow here on Post Show Recaps. With all of that said, we will be back next week with another episode of the pod. Until then, Corey B, take us away.
This is a show about a dean that started to grow a community. Wiggler and Jazz here till it ends. Meet up to Pastor Phil Greendale with all of